Hi, my name's Stuart Buchanan, and today I'm in conversation with Carol McGiffin and David Collingwood. David Collingwood is the Director of Funerals at Co-op Funeral Care. They've looked into some research about death, grief, and people sharing their concerns of when people die and not being able to talk about it openly. Thanks for joining me today, guys.
It's nice to be here.
Excellent. So right off the bat, this co-op research, does somebody want to tell us a bit more about what it's looked into? Just give us a sort of rough plan of what it's found.
Stuart, it's the biggest ever survey on death and bereavement, that certainly that we've ever done, and we believe that has ever been done. We've had over 30,000 people take part in this.
Wow.
And it gives you a real cross-section of how people's thoughts and feelings are around all different subjects around death and bereavement. And it's really clear that even here we are in 2018, and death is still a taboo subject. It's still something that lots of people think about. We know that, over 91% of people have thought about, losing someone.
Yeah.
But actually, they're coming to terms with their own mortality, and actually talking themselves about their own funeral is something that people still struggle to do.
And that's the thing, you can kind of understand, there's a sort of understanding to the idea of why people don't want to talk about death and that sort of thing, but it's one of life's great certainties, isn't it? It happens to us all. I'm going to make a bit of an assumption here and assume we've all experienced that kind of thing. But why do we think people in the whole don't want to talk about it? What reasons are there, do we think?
I think people are scared. I think people are still uncomfortable around the subject, because people don't know what to say.
Mm.
Bereavement is such a unique thing to the individual. There are no two losses the same. How people feel, how they cope with that, is very, very unique to the individual.
Mm.
And I think generally in society, what we tend to do is try and avoid that, because we don't want to say the wrong thing. We want to be nice. We want to be seen to be sensitive. But actually, it's quite the opposite sometimes in terms of not properly addressing this, because it's not only in the interaction between two people, but even people who are going back into the workplace. There's not enough discussion and thought about actually saying how are we going to handle this? What do you want us to say? What do you want your work colleagues to know or not to know? But generally, after 32 years as a funeral director, most people look at me and say, I just want people not to, walk across the other side of the street. I want people not to avoid it. Some days I'll want to talk, some days I won't.
But it's a difficult thing, though, David, isn't it? I mean, I've found it myself. It's people are so awkward around the subject, and are so fearful of saying the wrong thing. But in my view, there is no wrong thing.
No.
Yeah.
It's as long as people acknowledge it and you know that they're there. I think it's important also to let people know that you are there for them to talk to if they want to, because you're right. Sometimes you don't want to talk about it. Sometimes I wouldn't go out, after my sister died, because I don't actually want anybody to say anything to me.
Yeah.
So it's difficult, but I find it such a British thing. I think it's uniquely British,
stiff
actually.
Upper lip.
Yeah, it is a bit of a stiff upper lip thing, isn't it? Do you think, David? I do.
Definitely so. And we have cultures, within the UK now. I'm thinking perhaps when I've been involved in funerals for people of the Muslim faith, it very much is out there. You deal with it. The members of the family are involved in washing the deceased. There is a very natural part about being able to see the person before the coffin is closed. It is very literally almost hands-on, and almost dealing with that element of actually dealing with the physicality of death in terms of the person, it actually then you have to face up to all of these things, and the grief is shared almost, but it's natural. In grieving, there may well be a song or a mention or a smell that actually does trigger you. Suddenly you become overwhelmed with the thought of the loss that you've just been through. But we don't know how to handle that as people seeing it. And the best thing that I've seen that people do is just simply to acknowledge that somebody is upset, and just an arm or just an arm round a shoulder or a touch of the hand, just to say, look, I'm here for you. I know it's upsetting, and I'm just here if you do want to talk. But I completely understand you don't want to talk at the moment.
And I think the thing is that so many people have been through this. The research here that I've got in front of me, 7 in 10, 70% of us have lost someone close in the past 5 years. This is from the co-op research that we're talking about. And I think if people understand that a bit more, you know, they understand how many people not know how they're feeling. As you said, it's a very individualistic thing, you know, how you take on your own grief. But what we've also found is that the similar amounts of people are bottling up their grief, and that can lead to other things as well, can't it?
Yeah, I think the fact that people don't talk about death even before somebody's died,
yeah,
is a massive part of the problem, because in a way, like when you do talk to people, you know, with elderly parents or whatever, and you try to sort of mention, well, one day they're not going to be there. Mm. It's almost as though sometimes they go off into a spiral of denial.
Yeah.
No. I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about that.
Yeah.
And then when it does happen, it's a magnificent shock. And the thing is, I don't know what you think, David, but I think if you kind of accustom yourself and accept the fact that that is inevitable and it is going to happen one day, and think it through. What am I going to be like? Mm. What is going to happen? Have they got their affairs in order? And talk about it before it happens. And then I think it would be easier to deal with the grieving process, because you're kind of, well, you've semi-prepared your own head for it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
You're getting ready for what might happen, especially if it's, say, a family member that's maybe older. Not to say it's expected. Do you know what I mean? But like, if you know it might be coming, that kind of thing, to talk about it and just understand what that person wants after they're gone as well.
I completely agree with Carol, in terms of actually how much simpler it would be for us to be just that little bit more open. Now, mm-hmm. we've got to understand that this isn't a subject that is naturally falls for everybody easily to talk about. Mm. But there are stages to this. And I think the most, as a funeral director, sitting with a family where clearly there has never been any discussion about the funeral, about what a person would want, it's so hard on those relatives that are left to actually think, are we doing the right thing by that person? You know, are we arranging the funeral in the way that they would want? And, you know, anybody who does think about their funeral themselves and thinks perhaps, you know, we have more and more people now coming to us and pre-planning their funeral and pre-paying their funeral.
That's a great idea, I
absolutely,
think.
Absolutely, yeah.
All of the details are down on paper in as much or as little detail as you want to give us. The cost is guaranteed. You just pay one fee and that's it, no matter how much the charges do go up in the future. And how much better that is for a family to know that actually my mum or my dad or whoever has actually put their wishes down on paper already.
Oh, do you know what? They absolutely. When my mum died, I didn't have a clue, because right up until the point when she took her last breath, I swear that she was convinced she was never going to die. and this was like all through her life. It was just something that she didn't want to talk about or address at any time. Even when she lost her own father, she was so, I don't know, she completely wouldn't talk about it. She was so, I mean, she was grief-stricken for a very long time, and you knew that. Yeah. But it was strange that when she died, and the thing is, I'm the person in the family. There's four kids, or there were four. My sister, I lost my sister last year, but they were out of four kids. I was the one who always has to pick things up, and I don't mind doing that. I absolutely don't mind. I knew, you know, I had to sort her finances out. I had to sort, you know, all of her business, a council flat, and everything else. I had to do everything and organise the funeral, and that was the most difficult thing, because I didn't have a clue what she wanted.
It's a very good point in terms of people don't always think about what else there is around somebody's death as well. Like you say, you have to sort out finances and
everything,
the council flat, all that sort of thing. And to speak to your point earlier, David, if people are opening up, talking to each other about it, you know, that's the kind of thing that can take a long time afterwards, isn't it?
It's absolutely helpful, yeah.
Absolutely. You know, there are cultures within Europe, you know, Belgium and Holland, where actually from a very young age, people think about the funeral insurance and they think about funeral planning. Mm-hmm. And the figure is something above 80% of funerals in Belgium and Holland are pre-planned or prepaid in some way.
Wow.
Now, they're a very, very, you know, you think about Holland, a very kind of laid-back culture, laid-back nation, but actually they're able to face into something like that and actually make this a part of life and a part of planning, so that you're not leaving people with this legacy of not only having to do all of the organising like you had to do, Carol, but then reflecting afterwards, did I do the right thing? You know, was that the right thing to do for Mum?
Exactly. It's like, you know, who does she want there? Who doesn't she want there? You know, what sort of thing does she do? I didn't I wasn't even sure whether she wanted to be cremated or buried. You know, we just didn't have a clue. So we were in the dark about everything and not knowing, you know, what to do and what was right and what was wrong. And that kind of stays with you for a bit. Yeah. You just think, well, you know, what would she have wanted? So you're always kind of thinking to yourself. And sometimes I think, you know, if people don't sort things out, I know it's easier said than done to say to people, just sort things out. But it's kind of, it's a little bit selfish, really, because you're just leaving it to other people to deal with. And it's almost harder for the person who's left behind. Yeah. You know, if somebody dies, they don't know what's going on.
Exactly.
But when you're left behind and you're having to deal with that and all the other admin and everything else, it's just so much better if people do open up, talk about it, and plan ahead, I think.
It's the simple stuff. You're absolutely right, Carol. And I think, you know, I wouldn't expect people to go from the thread to the needle in terms of the detail around the funeral and what they want, you know, but actually just having a conversation about would you prefer burial or cremation? What are your thoughts on that? Or even saying something that you definitely wouldn't want gives people a clue to, you know, what would happen, because people remember that sort of thing. They don't, you don't scurry away and note it down in a notebook, but you remember, do you remember the conversation we had with Mum?
Yeah. Yeah, it registers,
when we saw that
it,
film or we saw the news, it's there and it registered, and you've got a guide and a way through then to think, actually, what do we need to do? Because as you say, Carol, when you're actually faced with all of these decisions about not just about the funeral, but you're dealing with an estate, potentially a will, a tenancy, all of those kind of things, and you've got to cope with the fact that you lost someone who you love.
Yeah,
all of that, plus this thing called cognitive grief, where your normal decision-making process is quite limited. Just, you know, we hoped we can understand a little bit about that and not over-face people with choices at the time of the arrangement, but actually you're not able to deal with things in the normal way because, do you know what, you're grieving.
That's true, but it does, in a way as well, I think, David, it delays the grieving process because you're so busy, wrapped up in all the important admin and everything else, and then and then when that's all done, then you collapse.
Well, I've got a bit of personal experience in that. My granddad passed away in January, actually, and I've seen it with my mother recently of sort of, she had to do all of that kind of thing. She was looking after her mum after losing her husband for the past 65 years, that kind of thing. And, you know, you see it months down the line where it can manifest as sort of like a physical illness sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, you get run down, everything catches up with you, and somebody sometimes just needs to come in and say, you need to stop for a bit and look after yourself.
Yeah,
you know?
That's the other thing, I think, that other people, you know, we have this problem and other people don't know what to say. Other people don't know how to deal with it.
Yeah.
But it's just basically, I am here. I know what you're going through. But, you know, if I don't know what to say, I'm not going to say anything at all.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So
one of the other things in this research, just to bring that back in, younger people are much more likely to bottle up their emotions. And someone might listen to that and think, well, obviously, you know, but what would we say to any young people out there that are struggling with something like this at the minute or are worried for something that might happen in the future? You know, what kind of tips would you have from a sort of funeral director's perspective, David? You must have seen this kind of thing in all ages.
Absolutely.
So for younger people.
I mean, if you think about younger people, you think about just generally what's going through the mind in terms of adolescence and growing up. And, you know, those are really, really busy brains with emotions and different things to actually learn and come to terms with. Add in bereavement and, you know, it's quite a heady cocktail, I think, for people to be able to cope with.
Definitely.
And all I would say to people is actually, you know, the younger people is to find someone, if you can, find someone that you can talk to.
Yeah.
And don't worry about what you're feeling. Don't worry that you're not feeling great. Don't worry that actually you can't face that song or listening to that song anymore because it reminds you of it.
Yeah.
That's normal. It's a normal trigger point. But I think that young people tend to look to older people for a steer and guidance from that. Even the surliest adolescent to, you know, the most cooperative, they tend to look at what do they grown-ups, how are they reacting? And I think that's where we all, you know, myself as a grown-up, I suppose, we've all got to be able to be far more honest and open and actually help, you know, younger people express their emotions in whichever way is best for them. And, you know, children going to funerals, it's a subject that often comes up, and I certainly, you know, I'm a strong believer in actually knowing that children are really quite flexible. They're very black and white.
Definitely.
And so long as something's properly explained to them, they're really comfortable about it. But we tend to think we protect them when we say, you know, Grandad's gone up into the sky or he's fallen asleep.
And, yeah.
You know, he's fallen asleep. How scary is that for a child? You know,
yeah,
when he's
definitely.
Coming to bedtime.
They won't want to go to bed.
Yeah,
exactly.
To be a bit more forward about it.
It doesn't
yeah.
pay to lie to children
no,
about things like that at
it
all.
It sticks, doesn't it?
No,
like, yeah.
I know. And I think, you know, I know a lot of people who won't let their children go to funerals because it's too distressing to see a load of adults crying. But and actually, the other problem I see at funerals is adults desperately trying not to cry.
Why? Yeah. Like, you need to let it out.
I'm like, why not? That's what it's for, isn't it?
Literally what it's for, yeah. Exactly that, yeah.
So, yeah.
Absolutely.
And kids, they don't... Yeah, they do get a little bit distressed when they see their parents crying, but that's the only way they're going to be able to get their heads around
it, I think.
Is
to understand it properly.
Yeah.
And do you think... actually, it's a very good point. In the past sort of year or so, we've seen the likes of Rio Ferdinand, who obviously lost his wife and has two young children to look after. Two or three young children to look after. And Sky Sports presenter Simon Thomas lost his wife as well after a battle. I think he lost her to cancer. And do we think these kind of high-profile people coming out talking about it is sort of teaching us a bit of a lesson, you know, setting the standard, saying, you know, we can talk about this. It's not something we should be scared of. Do we think we're kind of turning a corner in that aspect?
I think it's nothing but positive
yes.
that people are prepared to share their feelings and share their experiences, because it helps us to actually, you know, we're having the conversation today. Mm. We're having that debate now around,
exactly,
you know, death
yeah.
and bereavement. And I think it has to help. And I think, you know, social media, you know, for all its faults, is a fantastic way to
yeah.
very quickly share thoughts and opinions, and for people to be able to reflect in their own time, you know, on what's happening. I think there's more that we can do about being... as a society, being more open around death and dying and actually accepting none of us can avoid it. Let's understand it and let's do what we can to help each other as a society. That's surely the sign of a healthy society, is the way that they deal with their dead and the way that they deal with bereavement.
Yeah, I agree. But and also, like Julia Hartley Brewer said, that as a nation, we are becoming more sort of used to, and it's becoming more common that we can publicly and openly emote and grieve for people that we don't know that happen
yeah.
to be in the public eye. And it happens a lot on, especially on social media. You see, you know, people, but then they can't do it within their own families, with people
yeah.
they do know
yeah.
and love. So
yeah.
this is what I think has to change more than anything.
Definitely. So just to wrap things up then, this research we've been talking about today about the way people handle grief. David, if people want to have a look at that, if they want to find out a little bit more about what you do at the Co-op Funeral Care as well, where would you send them to?
Well, specifically about the survey, if they go to cooperativefuneralcare.co.uk/survey, they'll find the details of the survey and we'll be able to actually get the fuller survey, which is effectively titled Making Peace with Death. It's really interesting. And generally,
like,
if you've got some questions about funerals, about eulogies, about what to do, what to wear, the sort of things to think about, even if you're thinking about funeral planning, then if you go onto, you know, the Co-op Funeral Care website itself, there's lots of information there, hopefully to help educate and inform people.
Fantastic. Carol McGiffin and David Collingwood, Director of Funerals at Co-op Funeral Care, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you.